This is Linz.
This is Russ.
And we're married.
Are we?
Yep, since 2013.
We're the hosts of the Unfiltered Union podcast,
where we discuss popular headlines and interview interesting people.
Our opinions may vary, but we will never censor our guests or our viewpoints.
Welcome to the Unfiltered Union.
So we have a new guest today, and this one's going to be super fun.
You're going to take the lead on this one. I'm here for the ride.
Yeah. I've always been super interested in the pyramids, the architecture, the perfection that they are. And I found Sergio on Reddit.
Reddit is awesome.
Yeah, I love Reddit. But so I'm just going to dive right into the intro. Sergio Halabi is an independent researcher originally from Lebanon. He's currently living in Bahrain, and he focuses on ancient civilizations, mythologies, ufology.
Sorry.
I was just making sure I said it right.
Oh, yeah.
And conspiracy theories. He is also a spiritual investigator into the beyond and the paranormal. He studies near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences and the nature of reality. Just a jumping off point. Let's get to know you a little bit more. How did you begin your journey in this realm of research?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me on. For me, it was I've always been fascinated with anything ancient civilizations, mythologies, old religions. This is something that has been, on my mind since I was 8 and 9 years old. It's just completely fascinated me. I used to stay up at night, watch the Discovery Channel and the National Geographic Channel just to get any new information about, ancient Egypt, ancient Mesopotamia, Greek and all that. So this was always a big fascination to me. But a couple of years ago, I came to certain books and texts that I've read regarding the first civilization that ever was, which was in Mesopotamia, as far as we know. And that kind of shifted a lot of my thinking. It reintroduced me to what Abrahamic religions really were, to what the land, how it was, because I am from the land. I'm from Lebanon. I'm Arabic. I'm also Christian Catholic by birth. So there was a lot of... I connected a lot of dots when I started reading these things, and I started understanding that, what I've been told and I've learned, whether it was in school or theology and all that, that there are more to it than just what we were taught. Then it led me down, an unending rabbit hole regarding ancient civilizations, advanced ancient civilizations, what we could have been in contact with. Something that a word that came to me recently, which is called paleo contact, which is the contact of that our ancestors had with perhaps much more advanced beings, whether they were human in nature or not, is not the debate here. But they definitely knew something that is kept for us as of now. So that's what I try to do. I just try to uncover and rediscover ancient truth that was either lost to us or hidden from us by certain powerful entities.
Well, awesome.
That's a lot. That was loaded. So let's, I want to break it down.
It is.
I want to break something down that you said is that, things are lost to us from a civilization to the next, or from one generation to the next, if you really break it down. I mean, to what extent do you feel like you have to be able to research? Meaning, are you looking at texts from those time periods? Or are you looking at more, what do I want to say, like research of the now? Or how do you conduct your research?
It's basically the key thing for me when it comes to this topic is connecting the dots. Because they're always, we have to start at a specific baseline for why we believe certain things, or why mainstream science or archaeology or religions, why they have certain aspects to them. And then once you start understanding and reading into what mainstream does not want to talk about, that's when you start discovering that there's a lot of hidden information and knowledge and truth that you would think they should have been, you know, exposing us to them, as you know, whether it was in school or in, on TV or all of that, but they're not. So that just raises a question. Like, the first rule, as of, you know, in the world we live today, is that when the media is telling you to look right, you have to look left, because they're definitely distracting you from something or want you to see something else. But so when it comes to that, especially with ancient stuff, there's a saying that goes that, you know, our truth in terms of, let's say religion, our truth is written on paper, but their truth, the truth of the Mesopotamian dynasty, is carved in stone. So that's something that they could not hide or could not change, because it's literally carved in stone. So when you look into that, and you look into the first ever civilization, unchanged, unedited, unredacted, and you compare it to other civilization, and you see how much those civilizations have in common with the Egyptian pantheon of gods, with the Greek pantheon of God, even if we go into Latin America, if you go to Hinduism, China, Taoism, everything you can imagine, everyone is basically telling the same story. It's just changing the names, changing the dates. So that puts you on that path of trying to understand, like, oh, this needs a second look. This needs a much deeper look to what we've been taught.
Wow. No, that's powerful, because I think one of the things that you said right there is connecting dots and following. It's almost like the breadcrumbs, right? So that's powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And there's very...
Exactly.
There's very small group of powerful people that essentially gatekeep knowledge of what we're taught and what we...
Yeah, because... Yeah, because you only need a few, a small amount of people. Everyone else is just going to fall in line. If you trickle down that information into the right channels, then people are just going to take it among themselves and run with it and teach it to others and to their kids and to, you know, their students and all of that. So you don't really need to control a large population. It's very easy to manipulate the past to just, you know, control everyone.
For sure. And history is written by the victors. So...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is just proving that.
And as they say, if you can fake the news today, imagine what they do with history.
100%.
You know, like today we can see things happening on live on TV, on the news, and they tell you, nope, you're not seeing that. That's not true. It's like, it's right there. So imagine what they do with history, like just 100 years ago, not even going back thousands of years. So there is no question as to how much has been lost over the years.
For well, sure.
Especially as a species. Like, I feel like as a species, we are not as enamored or fascinated by history as we should be, because history repeats itself, right? You can find patterns. Yep. So if we're not being inquisitive and actually going back in the past and looking at things, then we're almost what? Self-centered? The idea of mindfulness, right? Is mindfulness something that we need to... reevaluate? Like, okay, you can be in the moment, but should you also be cognizant of the past?
Exactly. And it's easier to control the population when you hide things from them, especially how powerful they really are. So that aspect of control, like by reminding you that you need someone over your head, you need a power, you know, to control you, to tell you what's right, to tell you what's wrong, then you're basically taking everything from that population. And when we look back at those ancient civilizations, it's very clear how spiritual they were, regardless of what they were able to achieve on an archaeological level, let's say with the pyramids and all that, which we'll get into. But even spiritually, they were much more attuned to nature, to earth, to Mother Earth, to each other. And that is something that's completely lost to us now, like completely lost. And it's not something that happened, you know, by chance. It was, you know, it was designed so that we lose that power. And then we have to go and ask for help from those in power.
Right. We have been taught to rely on the government.
Yep.
On power.
In every aspect, not just government. Whether it was government, you need your politicians. Whether it was religions, you need your priests or your sheikhs or your rabbis or all of that. Whether it was, you know, financial, you need the bankers to tell you how to spend your money. Every aspect of your, how to eat, who, what, where to spend your money. every aspect of our lives is controlled by an entity. That's it.
I'm enjoying this. I've got my tinfoil hat on and I'm ready. Let's do this.
Me too. Okay, so let's just go ahead and jump right into what the main theme of this was about, which was ancient civilizations and pyramids. So
yep.
My first question for you is, were the Egyptians actually responsible for building of those pyramids? And if you think they were, do you think they had help? And if they had help, who was it from?
Well, I mean, to answer that is not obviously an easy question. And we have to set a sort of like a baseline, right, to why people like me, reach certain conclusions. So it's not because we don't know how things were done, so we just guess as to how things. It's what I said, where you connect the dots. So when you look at their aspect of civilization, the Egyptians especially, when you look at the way they wrote their own history, how they kept it in the records, what they prayed to, and the gods that they considered, you know, to be their creators, alongside with several other things, you can start to see the holes in this mainstream idea of what the pyramids were, how they were built, and all of that. Because mainstream media and archaeology and historians and all of that are completely adamant on one thing, right? It was the Egyptians. It was built around 4,500 years BC, and it was done under certain pharaohs, and they were tombs of those pharaohs, right? So the first hole I would poke in this theory is that, given how big the pyramid is, let's talk about the grand pyramid in Giza, and that it contains up to like hundreds of millions of blocks of stone, each weighing anywhere between 2 tons to 40 tons. So if we want to consider that being built within the lifespan of one pharaoh, okay, so it's like he commissioned it because, yeah, this is going to be my tombstone. Start building it. Then mainstream history tells you that it was built around in about 20 to 25 years. That's how long it took, like 100,000 slaves built it. But if you do the calculations, simple as that, then you would get that they are putting each stone on top of the other every 4 minutes, nonstop, for 25 years, so they build it. Four minutes to put one stone. That is like by itself, it's literally impossible to achieve. Even by today's standards, impossible to achieve. So that's not even remotely logical to even think something like this is real. So regardless of where they got the stones from, which, by the way, they didn't even get them from anywhere in Giza or Alexandria. They got them from the south of Egypt, the whole south, like all the way from Nile. And the theory goes is that the way they brought those stones, which are limestones, the way they brought them is that they couldn't bring them through the Nile because the Nile would flood over the years. So they had to actually move them across land. So add to that the time that they had to push those stones all the way from the south of Egypt, which is an hour by airplane. So you add to that into like, okay, that is starting to really not make sense anymore. And then there are so many now studies that have recently come up because now we have better technology than we did before regarding the time it was built and how it doesn't align with the Egyptian dynasty of Khufu, who built the Great Pyramid. So when they're studying recently the entire plateau of Giza, whether it was the three pyramids or the Sphinx, which is next to them, they discovered that there is a lot of erosion that is at the base of these structures. And these erosions come from wind, from sand, and surprisingly, it's coming from water as well. And that does not make sense if we follow the mainstream idea, because there should not be water in the Grand Sahara, in the desert. So there should not have been water. The way the erosions are happening or happened is through an extreme amount of water hitting it constantly for years. And that puts or dates those monuments and those buildings to not 4,000 BC, but more around 11 to 12,000 BC, given where that was when the last ice age melted, and that's when the flood came, and it kind of eroded the entire area of that plateau. So you can see the scarring of that you know disaster that happening. You can see it in on those buildings.
Wow.
Other stuff as well don't align. Other stuff as well don't align, which is the head of the Sphinx, because the head of the Sphinx doesn't fit with the rest of the body. The body is very, very big, and the head is extremely small. It looks very odd. And for a civilization that built with such precision the pyramids to a degree that is unbelievable, you do not make that mistake of building a big lion body and then put the head of a pharaoh, which is smaller. Now, there is a theory that it what that was actually the head of a lion. And when one of the pharaohs came to power, that's when he commissioned that the lion itself would be carved out. They would carve his face into that lion, which is why it's extremely small. And then the body is extremely big. So again, we see that the applying, when we apply when it was built, the time, for what reason, they don't align with anything that we've been told.
Wow. So you said millions of blocks, right? 2 tons a piece. How does a person or people,
yep,
how are they able to do such a thing? Like modern machinery nowadays can't even lift those blocks.
Yeah.
How does a group and of people do such a thing?
To give you one better, how is a group of people capable of doing something like this? And that, and what we're told is that those people did not master math, geometry, physics, chemistry, archaeology, engineering. How do you even build a monument that has lasted thousands and thousands of years without any sort of blueprint? They didn't leave any blueprint behind. Right. You know what I mean? And Egyptians, they had one thing about them that was so, you know, helpful for us now is that they left all the records, you know, with the hieroglyphics and everything that they've accomplished. And they would always put their greatest victories in battles, the greatest pharaohs, the greatest, you know, civilizations. They would keep those things in record. But they somehow decided not to keep any record regarding probably their biggest achievement ever.
Right. Right.
So where did those records go? Why are they not anywhere that is viewable, I guess? Because I think, you know, most things that the Egyptians carved into hieroglyphics are posted in one of the various areas around, yep, the pyramids and or some other monument. And then on top, I mean, just, yep, just on top of that, like those blocks, I think may have been Joe Rogan's podcast, where he even said that they have to be placed in such a specific way that if they are inches off at the top, the whole thing's going to topple over. So if they haven't, yep, mastered geometry,
they had to place them. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, if they haven't,
they had to place them with such accuracy, and then they needed to cover everything with white limestone. I don't know if you've seen those pictures of how, because they found traces of white limestone, cover everything, and then everything was extremely smooth. And then you can also add to it that the four angles of the pyramid align with the four cardinal points,
cardinal
north, and all the exactly of Earth.
How does that make sense?
And it's like off by one, and it's off by 1/16th of a degree or something. Like, that's not even, you know, like worth mentioning.
It's literal perfection.
Imagine perfection on every level is perfection. And we'll get to also why they were used later. But it's perfection in archaeology, perfection in engineering. Everything needed to be extremely perfect. And we've been told that, yeah, this is a civilization that did not understand nature so much that they worshipped the sun, and they worship the Nile, and they worship the crocodile and all that. Like, that doesn't, and you're talking as if about two different civilizations. You're talking about civilization that is capable of building something like this, which means they've mastered science completely. And then you're talking about civilization that doesn't understand the world they live in. How do you compute both civilization? It doesn't make sense.
Well,
the way I see it, and the way I've imagined it, is that the early nomads of the deserts, before the Egyptian dynasty was created, the humanity were nomads, right? We were hunter-gatherers. We're moving around all the time. What I believe happened is that a group of people reached the middle of the desert and they saw these monuments. They saw three giant pyramids and they saw a giant lion statue. And they were so overwhelmed by it that they thought that these were sacred places. So they built their entire civilization around those places and just called it home and took credit for it. Like, yeah, we made it.
So you believe, you don't, you think that a possibility is that something else built them?
Oh yeah, definitely something else built them. Not necessarily, it doesn't need to be non-human.
No.
It could be, but there could be a very ancient advanced human civilization that existed hundreds of thousands of years ago, before even the Ice Age, which started 120,000 years ago. They existed, they mastered everything, and when things went bad on Earth, either they were scattered everywhere, or they left, or they were completely extinct, we don't know. But it feels like that civilization, or one of them, was the one behind building these things. For example, with the melting of the ice caps because of the global warming, we are seeing there's a pyramid that started to appear in Antarctica, and science still rejects that idea. But you can see it very clearly. It's on Google Maps. It's not even like a hidden thing. You can just, you know, the coordinates. You enter them. You can see the pyramid. And if that's a real pyramid that was built by a civilization, that means that civilization lived on in Antarctica before the Ice Age, which means like around 200,000 years ago.
And why,
for them to be able to do
that. Why is Antarctica such a secret? You know, there's only researchers there. You can't go there. You and I can't pay for a plane ticket to go visit or take a look.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's like one of the most unbroken treaty among countries, like of everything they've ever disagreed on. This is the one thing they agree on. No one goes there.
Yeah, exactly. We'll kill each other over stupid stuff, but hey,
10 square feet.
Yeah, but hey, don't go to Antarctica. We all agree on that.
Yeah.
Well, you brought it up that the pyramids are perfectly aligned with cardinal points north, south, east, and west. But there's also another theory out there. A researcher named Robert Bovall pointed out that there are similarities between the layout of those three pyramids in the Giza complex and the relative separation between three stars in Orion's belt.
The Orion's belt.
So you're talking what we're led to believe that they were a basic civilization that then knows how to freaking line up Giza pyramids to stars in the sky? I'm confused.
Yep, exactly. And to align them also to such a degree that if you put the map of the star on top of the let's say you're viewing the pyramids from top view, and then you superimpose the Orion's belt on it, they actually match completely.
Right.
Graham Hancock, who was also on Joe Rogan, and he mentioned that the alignment of the pyramids to Orion's belt fits 100% to the way that constellation looked around 13,000 years ago. Now it's a bit slightly skewed because, you know, constellations evolve over time. Like we see them a bit differently. But if you look at that time, it aligned perfectly, which also re-puts that theory that it was built in a much ancient time than we think.
What else are we not told? If they're lying about this.
You cannot imagine.
Sergio's got a list. Well, here we go.
So I have another question about the pyramids.
Yep.
Nikola Tesla, he theorized the pyramids were more than just tombs. We've talked a bunch about that, and that they could be transmitters of energy, very similar to what a power plant does. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely read into his theory, and there's a lot of points that make a lot of sense, because first of all, the pyramid is not a tomb. Like that should be clear by now to everyone, that whatever they told us that they were used for, they're not. There was no mummies. There was no inscription guiding the soul of the pharaoh into the second life. There was no mentioning in any of their books ever that we are using these pyramids as tombs for our pharaohs. In fact, all the pharaohs and all the kings of Egypt were buried in the south of Egypt, which is called the Valley of the Kings, also the Valley of the Dead. That is an entire valley I visited, and you can see tombs after tombs after tombs for all their main pharaohs. Everyone was found there, and you can tell that these are tombs because of everything that surrounds them, the prayers, the chants, the offerings, and all of that. So the pyramids were not tombs, and they were not built for that reason at all. Now, when it comes to what Tesla believed and where his theory went, so he believed that they were conductors of energy, but clean energy. So that civilization was able to harness the energy from the sun, but also use whatever from this, the way the pyramid is built from the inside and all the chambers leading. So from the base of the pyramid, you would have, they would release chemical reactions at the base. And then, like, for example, hydrogen would come out through the chambers in a specific way. And it, because it was built with limestone and quartz is what we use, by the way, in like clocks and compasses and all of that. So it is a conductor of energy and electricity. So they would align the entire room of like what they call it as the tomb of the pharaoh, right? Like the room where he was buried. Everything inside is built from quartz, and it creates and emits electromagnetic energy when done correctly. And in 2018, and then again in 2019, as recent as like only a few years ago, they've actually thrown and tried to emit electromagnetic pulse towards the pyramids, and they've noticed that it does conduct it in a specific way. It focuses the energy one way or another, and then it spreads it out. And that's the theory behind that, which was Tesla was building his own machine on, is that if we take the same shape of that pyramid and if we conduct the same chemical reactions on the inside, then we are capable to release free, clean energy that could cover an extremely large area for you know, a lot of people. And it's obviously not that they were using it to ride their cars or to use their mobile phones, you know what I mean? So that energy that they used, that served a different purpose for them. But it is an actual machine to an extent. That's what they are. And that's what they keep trying to prove right now.
Yeah, and aren't we missing a huge key piece of it, which is those top keystone pieces?
Yes.
Yeah,
they're the top all missing. Keystone, which are nowhere to be found, surprisingly. And also because of the way the limestone is no longer covering because of all the erosion and everything. So it no longer works the way it was working before or what it was. But that's what they're finding, that was its original purpose.
Yeah, and it wasn't that made of... Well, it's theorized to be made of some different type of material too, other than it not what the entire pyramid was made of.
Yeah, so you have like within the pyramid, like four or five different type of material used, from limestone to quartz to other stuff as well, and each one served a purpose. So certain things would be for the base of it and how to build it, you know, the pillars that were inside, and others would conduct the energy through the different chambers, leading them to the middle chamber, and the limestone outside as well would cover it and contain it, because there's a theory about it, how to contain that energy and not have it spread to make sure that it's still there. So every part of it served a specific purpose.
And we're led to believe that this wasn't an advanced civilization. I don't understand. No,
they're just people who were afraid of grave robbers and, you know, just wanted their pharaohs not to be stolen.
Right.
Come on.
Well, if it can conduct that much energy, I mean, what it has been hypothesized as to what it would power? I mean, are we talking about like powering a city, or are we talking about a weapon, or is there a theory there?
Honestly, I haven't read a theory that is written in terms of what it could have powered, but I have my own, you know, theory, and coming from reading what their mythology is, and this goes into what their beliefs, right? So why would they do certain things? Why would they? And like I said before, that, you know, spirituality was a very big thing. Connecting to Earth was, you know, the way everything used to be done until a few thousand years ago. 300 years ago as well. So I believe that those conductors were more attuned to the frequency of the Earth, and that would create a more attuned population, and those beings would be more in tune with that frequency. So it wasn't so much as a beneficial for on a technological level, it was more on a spiritual level, because that's how they used to operate. Like, it was a very important thing to them, much more than other stuff. And with the connection to the constellations as well, and how they, you know, the theories about ancient beings, extraterrestrial beings, interdimensional beings, and all that, it connects into, you know, helping you with your own frequency. Yeah, they would be used for those purposes, to travel, if you want, astral travel, project, out of body, and other stuff.
Oh, did you just say astral travel?
Oh, yeah.
Like, to where?
I mean, that's when you talk about ancient, when they refer to in ancient mythologies about portals, right? Like, you read about portals where gods would come down from the sky, or their own priests would use them to communicate with beings and all that. To me, that is just a very limited vocabulary that they used to have at the time that we use in a different way right now. So when we talk about astral projection, they would call it, you know, walking into a portal and then completely like losing yourself or losing your body, and then transferring yourself to another location, another planet, another dimension, anything like that. So when we look back at these civilizations and the way they would describe certain things and certain experiences, when we align them in today's words and today's vocabulary, we see that there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of things that they would say that we should take them a bit more literally than we take them, because we do symbolically a lot now. That's the basis of archaeology and history, is that what this civilization experienced is symbolic. But if we see it more literal, then we can see that, no, it actually meant more. You know, like, for example, I'll give you there's a story in the Bible about Ezekiel and Elijah, and how he was walking with his brother-in-law in the middle of the desert. And then what it says is that a chariot of fire came down from the sky, and Elijah was lifted in a beam of light and wind. Now, if you compare that to what we have today, or what when people talk about, for example, alien abduction stories, regardless of whether it's true or not, you have to look at a civilization that doesn't know what a spaceship is and doesn't know what a light beam is. So they would use the next best word to describe that. So they would say, they don't say it was an airplane or it was a spaceship. It was a chariot, because that's all they knew. If it's something in a box that has people in it, it must be a chariot. It was a chariot of fire, because while that object could have emitted any form of, you know, fire or any form of for liftoff, that's what they would say. Oh, it was made of fire. And then he was beamed up. So there's a lot of stories about, like, you know, alien abductions in the Bible as well, in Egyptian mythology, in other mythologies as well. We just don't refer to them like that, because that's not how we are reading that language. But that's it.
No, we're almost taught to not dig deeper than surface level.
Yep.
For sure. Exactly. And I mean, even the way we translate things, I mean, you have how many different translations of the Bible itself, but if you were to go one for one, there are words that you just can't do. Like, what is the sound that God gave in order to pronounce his name? I am.
Yes.
YWE or something along those lines.
Yahweh. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So the sound that is supposed to be breath, right? So there isn't an exact translation other than what we have given it now to be God, right? So to your point, yep. anything that you read, if it is a translation from previous text, back to the idea of controlling information, the victors win. So whatever we wanted it to be in, whatever language we want to use religion in, that's what's going to trump. So I see how the breadcrumbs exactly. and everything connects for sure. It's just, it's so mind-boggling how much out there can connect. So I guess my question for you is, like, how do we weed through all this? How do we weed through all the information to make those connections?
I mean, it basically has to make sense to you. Like when I sit down and read certain things and I feel like, and I see that, you know, that story that I was told to accept it because I just have to believe in it. It doesn't make sense. I just have to believe it. Whereas what I'm reading now and I'm searching for now, it actually aligns more with the world we live in today, how it was before, what are they trying to hide from us, what they're trying to let us try to see. And when you start connecting them on your own, that's when you can read it out. You can immediately start seeing where the bullshit is and where some form of the truth is. Because at the end of the day, it has to make sense. It has to make sense in a logical way. And those things that, for example, in my research, when I'm reading, when I'm looking, when I'm going visiting myself, it makes a lot more sense for me to believe that a civilization that was not even a group of people walked into a desert and did not know anything about science, nor geometry, nor math, nor nothing, just sat down and built an entire civilization based on monuments. Then, out of nowhere, humanity moved from hunter-gatherer societies to building an entire civilization that has laws, that has crime and punishment, written language, spoken language, commerce, and all of that. That shift in humanity's history that happened, you can say overnight, just doesn't align with anything that we look at. Why did we live in the jungle and in the Sahara and in every aspect of, in biomes on the planet for hundreds and thousands and millions of years? The first Homo sapien, that, you know, the modern man, appeared 1.2 million years ago. That's the earliest we found as the closest thing to us, 1.2 million years. So you're saying for 1.2 million years, humanity lived in a specific way. And then suddenly 6,000 years ago, everyone's like, hey, let's just stop moving. Let's sit down. Let's create agriculture. Let's domesticate animals, build monuments, and, you know, we'll build the civilization.
Flip switch.
Yeah.
How does that? That doesn't work.
Right. And not just build monuments, but build them perfectly.
Build them perfectly and lasting for thousands of years into the future.
Yeah, you know, like, through an ice age.
Buildings today don't even last that long. Right. Through right. an ice age, through not... And while we are believing that, you know, the sun is God and the moon is God and all of that.
Right.
You know, like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Right. All right. Well, let's switch gears here a little bit. I kind of want to talk about near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences. I've always been super interested in near-death experiences. I am a Christian, and so is Linz. And we, you know, this seems like kind of a bridge between our world and that spiritual world. What are some common themes that you've researched about near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences?
So these are very two different topics, out-of-body and near-death. So if we focus on near-death experiences, one of the main thing that I saw, whether it was people I spoken to myself, that they have gone through that, or things, books that I've read, interviews that I've watched and all that, is that they almost all tell the same story. Even if these people don't know that, you know, they're not exposed to each other. Like, for example, there was a woman who was very close to me and to my family who passed away for 20 minutes, like her heart stopped beating for 20 minutes. And they were, you know, trying to get her back, and then they got her back. And after she got out of the hospital, she told me several times that, you know, I'm a changed woman. I'm very different. I've seen things on the other side that don't even scare. I'm not even afraid of dying anymore. I know what's waiting for me. And I'll tell you what she told me, but that woman, when that happened, and when she told me that story, she was like around 65 or 66 years old, and she's not technologically advanced at all. Like, she's not exposed to other people and what they're saying. Whatever she was sharing with me, she was sharing it from her own experience, which just happens to align with every other experience that I've read about or seen or spoken to as well. And these people talk with such an insane conviction that they don't even try to convince you with what they're saying. They're not trying to get you on board. It's like, this is my experience, and I know it's real and it's truth, and I don't care if you believe it or not, or if you think I'm crazy or not. It just is. That's what I saw. And what they have all in common is this floating out of the body. So seeing themselves in the room that they are in, they see, whether it was in a hospital, they see the doctors and everything, all these people, staff working on them, or in a bedroom, or in a car accident as well. Everything they see from above. And then they all say that I traveled and it feels like I was traveling faster than the speed of light. It was like at an insane speed. I'm just literally going through the stars. Like, I'm just floating fast and faster and faster. And then I've reached a place where it was made of light. Like, it was light itself. It wasn't any physical place. It's just made of light. And everyone experiences or talks about the overwhelming sense of love that they felt. It was like, what one person told me, it's like the place was built from love. You know what I mean? Like, we can't even experience. And again, everyone who talks, they say, my words are very limited. Like, what I'm telling you now is not even 5% of what I experience. I don't have words to actually share with you what I saw and what I felt. It's just, this is the closest thing. Now, for example, this old woman, she told me that she reached a place and she felt love, and she also felt at home. She just felt like, all right, I'm here. Like, I'm back.
This is my place.
But yeah, this is me. This is my place. But she also felt a hand touch her on her shoulder, and there was no word spoken, but she knew what was that entity telling her, which is, your time is not now. You need to go back. And she went back. And this, your time is not now, is shared by everyone who has a near-death experience. Everyone says, I understood that, yes, this is my home, but it's not my time to be here now. I have to go back because I have something left undone on earth. And then they go back and they bring this peace with them and they bring this acceptance. It's really fascinating to see.
I actually have a family friend. He's passed away now, but he, as a young boy, he drowned and he had the exact same experience that you're describing. He was floating up. Yep. He was looking down on them doing CPR on him. And then he felt that grab on the shoulder and he said, it's not your time yet. And boom, he was back alive. And if you were to ask him about it, he was an older gentleman and he had cancer when I knew him. And he knew he was going to die. He knew for a fact. He was like, this is terminal. I have a year. He did not care because of that experience he had as a kid.
Yep.
He didn't care.
Yes, exactly.
He knew. He was like, I know what's after. I ain't worried about this. You know, what's after is way better than what's going on down here.
Yep. And they just don't care. Like, they don't care what you think of them.
The conviction of someone who is literally and knows they're literally going to die because they have cancer, and he chalked it up to meh, you know. Like, he didn't care.
It's gonna be good to go back, you know. Like, I'm ready to go back.
He knew. It was like he knew exactly where he was going, and he did because he experienced it before. Shoo.
It's really fascinating, like that this whole thing, and there's always, they try to give you like all the scientific experience, examples or explanations, and you see a light because the cornea in your eye is I don't know what and all that, but to me this is just like it's just trying to ground everything, you know, in the realm of this physical world, and to try to prove it and all that. But there are some experiences you just cannot prove. Like, it's just, no matter how much you try, there is no proof.
Yeah, it's just like all the other history stuff. They want you to be held to them and look to them as the power. But if you know after this, there's an, you know, there's something after, you're not really controllable anymore.
And you become like, this is what happened with me, because I do come from a Catholic background, but where I am now is more like, I don't really follow the organized religion aspect of it, but I still believe in a God. I believe in,
for sure,
in creation and all of that. But but what it also gives you is this sort of sense of control that they took from you. Because you know that I am in control of myself. Like, I'm a believer of a form of reincarnation, if you want, that, you know, we came, you know, we existed before coming to Earth, and we're going to exist after we come to Earth, and we might come back and we might not come back. So this is because, you know, humans, like, we exist on several dimensions, basically. It's not just this physical reality that we're experiencing now. We experience it on all different dimensions that exist. But to me, that thought puts me in power. You know what I mean? Gives me back that power that they took from me, because I'm no longer just waiting for them to tell me what's right and what's wrong and what is acceptable and if I made a mistake or not, or what should I believe in, or what should I regret. It, to me, it's like, this is my life. This is what I'm experiencing now, and I'm going to experience it to its fullest. Whatever this life has to give me, I'm going to go for it completely. And I've already made the choices that I'm going to make here. You know what I mean? Like there's something that we call like a soul contract, if you want, and soul agreements, where before coming here, you kind of agree with certain souls that you're going to trigger the hell out of me and get me to heal on that aspect. And you're going to bring me love, and I'm going to do this to you, you know? So with that, it's like, everything is in such a perfect harmony everywhere, you know, and it's like so fascinating.
For sure.
What, with everything that we've talked about so far, we've talked about how to kind of differentiate between information that you're receiving, that you're reviewing, that you're trying to make the connections and the dots. But if someone is just a non-believer, I guess, or a naysayer, you know, this is all conspiracy theory. What would you say to them? Yep. Like, what is your message to someone who just is totally writing this off?
Well, first of all, there is a reality we have to accept. It's something. It's a quote I read a while ago, and it's like hit me deep. And it says, "You can't help someone out of an idea that they did not think themselves into." Ooh. Okay, you cannot help someone out of an idea they did not think themselves into. Any ideas that we would have, or these people have, is because someone planted those ideas in them. They were brainwashed, indoctrinated, forced, groomed, everything, all the words you can imagine, to have them believe certain stuff. This is the history of the world, and there's nothing else. These are the religions of the world, and there's nothing else. This is what you have to do to live, and that's it. Obviously, it's a very difficult process to break away from these. If you do not have an innate curiosity to challenge these thoughts and to try to find your own answers, then it's going to be very difficult for people to come out of these thoughts, to come out of these ideas. So I accepted that. I accepted that in people around me. I've accepted that with people telling me I'm a conspiracy theorist, I'm crazy, and all that stuff. That's fine with me. What I do is that I will never stop talking about this, because I know that planting seeds might eventually help. You know what I mean? Maybe 10 years from now, someone is going to look at something and go like, yeah, you know what? This doesn't work. Like, why are the pyramids like this? You know, maybe. And then they go back to, wait, I've heard an idea that I, you know, like 10 years ago where someone mentioned something like this. That's it for me. Just be given that we have this task and we have this capability of asking questions and searching for the truth and going after knowledge, then it's our duty to move that to someone else, to share this. Whether they accept it or not, it's their choice and their life path. Whatever their agreement they had, that's what they're going to do. But it should not hinder us from actually doing those things. So I just keep talking about it. Whoever's going to pick it up is going to pick it up. It's like a radio station. It's like a frequency. Whoever's on the radio station is going to listen to it. Whoever's not is not going to listen to it. But perhaps at some point they will. So we just keep doing it.
I love that. I really do. You have some you have some great quotes up your sleeve. That was awesome, Sergio. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. You. So our final question that this is our fun one. If you won $10 million tonight, what would be the first thing you do tomorrow?
First thing to do, not to like what I'd buy something to do. Oh, damn. First, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to fall asleep, okay? There's no sleeping. That's not going to happen. You know? It's gonna be like, oh, my God, this is not good. I think I would actually take time to process it. You know, like I would actually take a very, just take it easy to kind of like, you know, let it digest it and let it go like, okay, this is happening. This has happened. Now what I can do, like I need to process it very slowly, you know, and usually in my life, I'm like, you know, moving all over the place. But for something like this, it's like just to absorb it, you know, and you need to absorb it for a while. And then I can start, you know, deciding what to do, what choices to make and all that. But take it in. That's what I would do. I'll take it in.
There you go. Okay, so Sergio, we're going to have you come back, and we're going to have you answer that question after you take it in.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, I would have taken it in by then. Sure.
So you yourself, you are a podcaster, and you are on social media. We want to make sure that people that are listening can find you. So if you could just tell us about your podcast, where people can find you online, your website, things of that nature. Shout them out.
Sure, sure. So the podcast is Paradigm Shift with Sergio Halabi. That's because we're trying to shift our thinking process. So that's why I called it Paradigm Shift. And as a podcast, it's available everywhere. iTunes, Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and every podcast channel there is. I'm there. I also have an Instagram account. And on that Instagram account, I go more into visual aids. So whatever the topics that I usually discuss and talk about on the podcast, I create more designs for them and put the, you know, add text and all of that so that people kind of like, you know, process them slower and get more visual cues out of them. And yeah, that's it. Basically, I'm there.
Okay. Awesome. We really do appreciate having you on. I want to definitely think about some more topics to have you on, like maybe aliens and things of that nature, because never know.
Yeah, that definitely is a topic for its own episode. So yeah, it takes a lot of time. A lot of time.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Sergio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Unfiltered Union.
Did you like the episode? Support the show. Visit us on Patreon at patreon.com/unfilteredunion.
Or you can rock some merch. Check out our store at store.unfilteredunion.com.
For all other things unfiltered, check out our site at unfilteredunion.com.
It's what you do with the things you love.